Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here to today's program. I would like to, first of all, give you a heads up about the next few weeks. Next week, we will be talking about cybersecurity with Dr. Kamal Jabor from the Rome Lab. So we'll be talking about issues in cybersecurity as well as some things that are going on at Rome Labs and whatever else you have on your mind that you'd like to ask him. Then on November 1st, we will have Tom DiNapoli, the state controller, who will be talking about issues that that office is involved in. This will be his first visit to the roundtable, so we'll give you the link. You might want to check out his website and see what they are up to. And then November 8th, as I mentioned before, the Ivory Tower half hour, and I think our focus will undoubtedly be on the elections that Thursday afterwards. So just something to look forward to. Today, though, of course, roundtable members know as well as anybody that change is hard, right? We know change is hard. It takes us a while to get used to new things. Today we're going to be talking about changes at the post-standard, and I want to thank TMR member Stan Lindhorst for helping to get today's speakers here to the floor. And Stan, who is senior managing editor at the post-standard, will be introducing our speakers. And since there are two, I said he could have twice as much time, so don't boo him off the stage.
Thank you, Sandra. Thank you, everyone. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, that was enthusiastic. This is going to be a good crowd. Well, I'm pleased to introduce you to Tim Kennedy and Steve Rogers. Tim is president of the Syracuse Media Group. Now, that's a new company that's operating the Post Standard in Syracuse.com. When I asked Tim for some facts to make this introduction, he pointed me right to his LinkedIn profile page. That might tell you all you need to know about how fully Tim is immersed in the digital age. And you can look him up later if you'd like the details. But let me hit a few highlights for you. He was most recently general manager at Rodale.com and Rodale News Network in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. There he developed the initial strategy, business plan, and national sales plan for what was a digital startup. Before that, he was CEO and president of the Morning Call newspaper in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And that's where he proved himself as a leader who could really produce results. He grew the newspaper's digital audience an astounding 200%. Now, Tim is a native of Michigan, a graduate of Western Michigan University, and he earned an MBA at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University. Tim and his family moved here in August. He can tell you more about them. I found Tim to be an engaging, welcoming man. He has that welcoming way about him and boundless energy. Trust me on that. Steve is the new chairman of the Syracuse Media Group. Now, after he graduated from Syracuse University, Steve became a post-standard reporter. Then in 1964, he joined the Miami Herald, and he rose to managing editor of news. And that was in an era when the Miami Herald was one of the greatest newspapers in America, and Steve had a big hand in that. In 1980, Steve became editor and publisher of the Herald Journal, the Herald American, and the post-standard. Okay, those are some of the facts about Steve. Like Tim, I asked him for a few details, and he really didn't want to talk about himself at all. But I've known Steve for a while, and I can add a few details on my own. He's more than an editor and publisher. He's so active in our community. He's a man with morals, values, ethics. He's a generous supporter of the arts. He's very active in his church. He's an astute businessman. But he always makes business decisions as a human being, and he evokes trust and loyalty among all those around him. He's a leader, and he's a great writer. And right about now, I think he's wishing he had written this for me, or at least edited it way down. Steve gave me the chance to start our digital media, and we launched Syracuse.com in 1994. And you could count on one hand at that time the number of newspapers in America with websites. As many websites did back then, we put a little counter on the bottom of the homepage. That counter, sort of a little odometer that showed how many hits the page had received, went round and round. And upon launch, when we launched that counter and launched our website, it had gone up a few hundred very quickly. Well, Steve gently suggested to me that we remove that counter until, like McDonald's, we could boast about millions and millions served. Well, I want to tell you, long, long ago, we surpassed millions and millions served. Syracuse.com is a huge success, and now our audience is huge, really huge, and it is growing fast. It's growing fast at Syracuse.com and on all the many apps on portable devices. So today, Tim and Steve are here to tell you about that phenomenal growth and the digital age ahead.
Stan, thanks for saying those kind words about Tim. And I need to tell this audience that when McDonald's was counting the number of hamburgers it sold, it got a dollar for each one. How many dollars did we get from all those hits on Syracuse.com in the good old days? Stan, as you probably know, as he is a faithful attendee of Thursday Morning Roundtable, it was a pioneer. He led the creation of the first website of any Newhouse newspaper at a time when websites were something that nobody knew what they were. And he did an absolutely marvelous job. Not that it went to his head, but he truly believes he invented the internet before a former presidential candidate. Anyway, Stan, thank you. When Stan said he was going to say something about me, I said, I want you to know that I'm on LinkedIn, but my page is blank. I am on Twitter, but I follow some people, but if anybody follows me, they don't find much. But that's just the way it is. And let me just say, it's a delight to be here. My father was here many years ago, I would say 30 or 35 years ago. And he was quite excited. I said, Dad, what are you speaking about? He said, solid waste disposal. And that was before we had to worry about recycling newspapers. But anyway, he made us all gather around the family radio, just like Central New Yorkers do today at 8 a.m. on Sunday mornings, to hear what he had to say about solid waste. Enough about solid waste. Let me begin this by asking, you know, every time you go to a lecture, or I go to a lecture, or a play, a performance, a concert, not so many of those lately, somebody on the stage pulls out one of these and says, will you please turn it off? I am asking all of you to pull your cell phones out of your pocket, not to turn them off, but to throw them out the window. And when you get home tonight, please ask your children to do the same. And if you are lucky enough to have grandchildren, take it away from them if they will let you. I know I have trouble with my little granddaughters getting the darn cell phones out of their hands. Ask them to give them to you. This is the smartphone. It's the culprit, or one of them. They and laptops and tablets and an array of other digital products have changed the ways of the world and have had profound impact on those of us in the newspaper business. Do you know that more than 1 million Americans own smartphones? A majority now get news through digital devices. Nearly a quarter of all U.S. adults get news on not one, but two digital devices. The rapid rise of digital devices as providers of news and information has been matched by a sharp decrease in newspaper circulation, readership, and revenue. In just the past 5 years, newspaper revenue across the country has fallen by 50%. And if there is any doubt in your mind that the internet is responsible for this, listen to this. In India, where the population is a cool 1.2 billion, fewer than 10% of its residents have internet access. And with literacy rates growing rapidly there, circulation and advertising of India's newspapers is booming. The Times of India has a daily circulation, get this, a daily circulation of 4,300,000, the largest of any English language newspaper in the world. This according to a recent article that you may have seen in The New Yorker. If you don't speak English, then read the Hindi newspaper called Dainik Jagran, with a circulation of 16.5 million. But we are not in India, unfortunately, I think. The toll of the internet on newspapers in the United States has been startling. Newspapers have stopped publishing. Newspapers have filed bankruptcy. Almost every newspaper has reduced the size of its staff and has cut the amount of space it devotes to news and to content. The long-term prognosis for newspapers may not be bright, but they have weathered tough days in the past. The death knell for newspapers first sounded in the early 1930s with the advent of static-free FM radio. News and entertainment on radio threatened the status of newspapers. Edward R. Murrow reporting from the battlefields of World War II. Such programming as Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. Publishers were really, really nervous. The end was near. Until publishers realized they could buy radio stations. And they did. Along came TV, which posed an even bigger threat. But publishers, some of them pretty smart, started buying TV stations. And then along comes the internet, and it became hard to figure out what there was to buy. Perhaps slow to react, perhaps slow to understand the new media landscape, publishers began to cut costs as profit margins dipped. That resulted in this very dire situation. Wrenching changes in the business of newspapers resulted in wrenching changes in journalism. And that is not good news for an informed society or for a free and open democracy. Of course, there have been wrenching changes in newspaper journalism right here in Syracuse. Long, long before the internet, before radio and TV, there were newspapers in Syracuse, the first published in 1814 in Onondaga Hill, the Onondaga Register. The Post Standard traces its roots to 1829, when Vivas Smith put together two small newspapers and created the Onondaga Standard. Its first big story, an extra edition, came 5 years later, when a fire nearly destroyed its Hanover Square location. The newspaper did limp on, thank goodness, in a reduced form for many years. In 1894, another newspaper called the Syracuse Post was born. On the day after Christmas in 1898, the owners of the Standard and the Post merged, creating the Post Standard, its first issue, New Year's Day, 1899. Does anyone remember the Herald Journal and Herald American? A paper called the Daily Journal was created in 1844. The Evening Herald created in 1877, and a Sunday newspaper owned by William Randolph Hearst and called the Syracuse American was born in 1922. S.I. Newhouse bought these newspapers in 1939. Publishing the Herald Journal in the evening, the Herald American on Sunday. And in 1942, Newhouse bought the Post Standard. The Herald Journal and Herald American lasted until 2001. And what SI Newhouse had assembled in 1939, it fell to me to disassemble, which was not fun, but it had to be done because the Herald Journal had fallen victim to changing habits of readers. An evening newspaper was no longer needed nor wanted. I mention this because in our business and in all businesses, and you've heard already, nothing ever stays the same. Change and adapting to change is essential if we are to stay alive and thrive. So there are big changes coming to the Post Standard, as most of you know. On February 3, which happens to be Super Bowl Sunday, we will begin adapting to our changing universe. That's the day we plan to throw off the shackles of the last decade and plow ahead toward a very promising future. These last 10 years have really been tough. We had produced what we thought was a great newspaper. For many, many years, we were the best read newspaper in America, something that is determined by the number of readers in your metropolitan area versus the number of people who live there. Year after year, we were number one. We achieved that through the hard work of reporters, editors, photographers, and artists, led by Stan Linhorst and Mike Connor and Tim Atzeff, who, if he is still awake, is someplace in the back of this room. It was really a terrific newspaper. And yet, despite that, our readership, our circulation, our revenue was slipping. We were profitable, but we remained profitable by cutting our staff through two rounds of buyouts and cutting the space we devoted to news. It became apparent that our business was not sustainable. We needed to change. On August 18, I told our employees that we were going to create the two new companies, Syracuse Media Group, digitally focused to publish the Post Standard and to operate Syracuse.com, and Advanced Central Services Syracuse to provide essential support services. The Syracuse Media Group, and you'll hear more about that from Tim, will be responsible for news, advertising, and marketing. It's going to operate in new offices apart from our existing building. Advanced Central Services will operate in our existing building and will run our printing, circulation, human resources, accounting, and information systems departments. Paul Thomas, our former circulation director, and like Tim, another bright and promising executive, will run that company. When I talked to our employees, I said, we need to preserve a future for the Post Standard. We need to keep that voice that has been alive since 1829 long into the future. And I said, if we simply maintain the status quo, if we continue to do just what we have been doing, no matter how well we do it, we would face extinction in a matter of years. We either adjust or we perish. We are doing in Syracuse what Newhouse newspapers in Michigan, Alabama, and New Orleans have done. Focus resources on a digital world and cut back, but by no means abandon print. Stephen Newhouse, chairman of AdvanceNet, made this comment. We are in the midst of a digital revolution. It is useless to bemoan it. The trick is to turn that trend to the advantage of our papers, our readers, and our communities. This is a difficult task, and it is one we are deeply, deeply engaged in. By taking transformational actions now, painful as some of them are, we have a chance to continue to do what we do best as publishers, journalists, business partners, and community leaders for decades to come. What we will be doing in Syracuse is to provide home delivery of the Post Standard 3 days each week, on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. We will publish smaller papers on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Those papers will be available at newsstands throughout Onondaga County, but they will not be home delivered. We will do this with a staff considerably smaller than the staff we have today. We are having layoffs for the first time. That is the part of this process that Stephen Newhouse called painful. I am worried about all of our employees, those who will have jobs with our new companies and those who won't. And I am worried about what smaller news staffs here and around the country portend for an informed public, for a vibrant democracy. There are fewer reporters around today to poke their noses into the dark spots of our society. Fewer reporters in Washington, fewer in Albany, fewer in foreign bureaus. You know, it's one thing to have a free press. It is another if there aren't enough journalists around to enforce it. Paul Starr is a Pulitzer Prize-winning professor at Princeton and a media authority, and he offered a cautionary note about content on the internet. Online, he said, there is certainly a great profusion of opinion, but there is little reporting, and still less of it is subject to any rigorous fact-checking or editorial scrutiny. Despite all the development of other media, he said, the fact is that newspapers have continued to field the majority of reporters and to produce most of the original news stories in cities around the country. But there is a danger as newspapers cut journalists from their payrolls. One danger of reduced news coverage is to the integrity of government. It is not just a speculative proposition that corruption is more likely to flourish when those in power have less reason to fear exposure. Our employee count is smaller today than it was 5 years ago. But come February 3, we will have more reporters on the street covering the news than we do today. They will cover breaking news, sports, business, arts, entertainment, and they will continue to do the investigative reporting that I think has been a hallmark of our newspaper for many, many years. I feel we are doing something that few in our business are doing. We are making a leap into the future. I believe we are going to be successful. I believe we will keep the voice of the Post Standard alive, if not till 21, 20, maybe 22, 29, and then let somebody else worry about it. So I will now yield the floor to Tim Kennedy, who I think you will find, I have found to be a terrific guy, somebody who is going to play a key role leading us into tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I do have a hard time sitting down. Is there a mobile mic? Is it okay if I kind of walk around? I want to do a couple things. One, I want to introduce myself to you. Thank you for allowing me to be here this morning. And then I want to talk a little bit about the changes that we're making, and also get into the whys, because I think and I know everyone has a lot of questions, so I want to leave a lot of time to ask Steve all the questions. But the first thing I want.
Stan will give you the answer.
But I think the first thing that I want to do is thank Steve. Since I came to Syracuse, Steve has been a terrific partner, and I think most of you know Steve. And what's going on at the Post Standard is, as Steve said, is very difficult. And I know that many of you know a lot of the folks there, and the dignity. And the humanity that Steve has gone about leading the organization through this. It was really important to Steve to do this the right way. And he told me that in one of the first meetings that we had. And this is incredibly painful for anyone who's been through this kind of change in your organization. And Steve has done a tremendous job leading the post standard during this time. So thank you, Steve. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. First, I'm married. My wife Susan is from Colorado, where she shoveled a lot of snow, and she has promised me. This is mic'd, right? And this is for so. And she's promised that she's going to do all the snow shoveling here in Syracuse. So I understand we get a lot of it. I was going to tell some baseball stories and relate my first conversation with Steve, because he's a big Yankees fan, about my past. I moved up here from outside Philadelphia area. Was a little bit of a Phillies fan, but I spent most of my time in Chicago, where I became a Cubs fan, which is, you know, not really being a baseball fan. But I was born in Detroit, so I am a Tigers fan. And I'm sorry we got rained out last night. But we live in Manlius. I have two beautiful daughters, and I have a son down at St. Joe's University down in Philadelphia. But we're thrilled to be here in Syracuse. This is I've only been here 8 weeks, but this is a great community. Everyone told me that when I was moving up here, and everyone has told me that since I got here, and I believe that. The quality of life is tremendous. The people are tremendous. There's a heartiness and a soul that you can't escape it when you first move here. So that's terrific. Let me talk about the post standard a little bit. As Steve said, you know, in the industry, you know, change is painful, but change is inevitable for where we are. The newspaper industry in the United States has lost about 60% of its advertising revenue in the last since about, you know, 2005. And anybody who is in any kind of an organization where you lose that much of your revenue, it forces painful decisions. And I give the Newhouses, and the first time I sat down and met Michael and Stephen Newhouse, and we talked about strategy and we talked about the business, it became clear that we needed to do a lot of things different, because what we were wasn't going to succeed. And Steve has captured that well in talking to the community and to our employees, you know, stating, if we don't change, you know, we may perish. We will perish. And so change is inevitable. So what I wanted to do, I don't have all the answers, but I have some of the questions, so maybe I'll ask you. But what I wanted to do was bring you sort of inside, give you kind of an inside baseball look at a couple of the reasons. It's easy to say, it's not easy to say, but we often say we have to change. But unless you've been in the four walls of the Post Standard in any newspaper, you know, why do we have to change? So let me give you a couple examples for why change is critical. And we talk about, you know, what we need to do digitally, but a lot of what we're doing now is focused on simplifying what we do in print. So the first thing I'd tell you, I'll bring you a sort of inside scoop, never before disclosed information about the way we operate. But Stan and Steve had talked about Syracuse.com, and it was launched in the Post Standard, but today it operates separately from the Post Standard. So Syracuse.com operates over here, the Post Standard operates over here. We do a lot of things together, but we don't integrate. And anyone, you're all leaders, you've been in organizations. There's a difference between being where people sit together and they can share knowledge and you can efficiently operate and focus. You can do that when you're all together. When you're separate, it's really difficult. So the first thing we need to do is bring Syracuse.com and the Post Standard together, and that's what we're gonna do. The second sort of scoop, if you will, is the print business is really complicated. And Tim, you know this, you were there. A lot of other folks that have been inside know that. But I'll give you an example. And there's good reasons why it became complicated. As we grew we just added complexity to the business. But as the business has contracted, we don't need the complexity anymore. So I'll give you another example. We were doing an analysis a couple weeks ago, and in the Post Standard offers over 180 different ad sizes. So if you've ever bought advertising, or you read the paper, you know their ad sizes are all come in all shapes and sizes and in colors and can be in all kinds of different places. But there's 180 different ad sizes, and only 15 or 16 of those ad sizes generate, you know, 80% of the revenue. But the other 120 ad sizes create a lot of complexity in how we put the newspaper together, how we sell, And so we're gonna try to simplify the business so we can create efficiencies. Steve had mentioned we're gonna have more reporters on the street, and we're also gonna have more salespeople. And one of the questions we get a lot is, well, how are you gonna do that? Because net, we're gonna have, you know, fewer people. But we're gonna create these efficiencies. I'll give you another example. Third example is on the news side. On the news side, while our reporters have cell phones and we have digital photography and we can wirelessly transmit news and information from one end of Syracuse to the other and put it up on the internet, our systems are still geared toward reporters going out and covering news, bringing it back, putting it in a software system that is geared toward print. And part of what we're going to do is try to unshackle the our reporters and our news gatherers from that sort of software, from that kind of software, and allow them to do this, post their content, pull the news, pull the stories, pull the photography, and be able to do that to the web in a digital way first, and then we'll pull that through and create the newspaper. And again, it's a little bit of inside baseball. If you're falling asleep on me, that's not my intention, but there's complexity in the business, and one of the things that we're going to do is simplify that in the new company. So let me turn to digital, because it is the digital business is growing. It's growing from when Stan and Steve launched Syracuse.com, our digital business, we did 2.6 million unique visitors last month. About half of those are in the Syracuse area, so that's about 1.3 million. And our revenue is growing nicely on the web. We think we can continue to do that. And at the end of the day, you know, I was talking to someone before the meeting, and we were talking about, you know, the goal here is to create a sustainable growing business. Because if we do that, we can maintain the journalism, we can maintain the presence, we can maintain the voice, as Steve said, for, you know, generations to come. So that's what we're trying to do. And so, you know, our digital business is growing. I think beyond that, if you think about what we're doing with digital, we're transforming the company. So we're in the process of this startup business, or startup, and anyone who's been involved in a startup, it's terribly exciting. We're creating, you know, new organizations. We're pulling people in. We're going to hire a lot of people. And in a digital world, we're going to hire people that are community engagement specialists. We're going to hire content data analysts. We're going to hire a lot of positions that perhaps didn't exist before, because we need those skill sets. And I think if you were to visit, you know, the Newhouse School up at SU, you would see that's what they're training, you know, journalists to do. They're training the news, the communication folks, to understand and survive and be incredibly productive in a digital world. And so we're trying to create those positions. We know we need those skill sets in the new company, and that's what we're largely out hiring for. So you know, that's the second part of just giving you some insight into where we're going with Syracuse Media Group. And then I think I don't have a blueprint to show you about the future, but I think the other thing I would leave you with before questions is, you know, sort of why we have to do this. And there's the history of where we've been and where we're going, but just think about, Steve had held up the smartphone, but if you, I don't know if anyone bring a tablet device. Tablet device is interesting, right? So I was looking at some data about new research came out, and about 25% of the adults in the U.S. now have a tablet. That's up from about 12% a year ago. So there's been an explosion in tablet devices, and all of the manufacturers, there's now an incredible variety of tablets that are going to be available for the Christmas season. And I'm not up here shrilling for any one of them, but, you know, we have coupons up here for our own tab. No, we don't. I think probably in 12 to 18 months, we're going to see 50% of the adults are going to have a tablet. And that's, you know, it's both good and terrifying, right? Because what we know about tablets and usage is that folks that are on it tend to be good news consumers. about two-thirds of the adults that have a tablet consume news on a tablet device. And that's good for us. Right? If you have a tablet, you know this, you can get our content through Syracuse.com through a browser, or you can download an app, and we have a number of apps. We're going to develop more apps. You can download an app, and you can get your content through an app. So, you know, we have options there that perhaps advantage us relative to a smartphone or another device. But that's going to explode. But I think more daunting, or perhaps to frame the challenge for Syracuse Media Group, is tablets were our recent invention. They're only 3 or 5 years old, something like that. And I don't know, and I don't know if anyone here knows what is going to be out there 5 years from now. Please tell me, because we need to know that and think about it. But it may be those Google glasses. If you've ever seen the Google glass, they're developing sort of tablets in your glasses so you can see and browse on your. I have no idea how that would work. But if someone's going to wear that, I probably want to have some advertising and have some content on your glasses, Tony. but I think the point is I'm not sure what's going to be the next digital device that we're going to have to deal with, but we are going to have to deal with it. And so what we're going to do with the Syracuse Media Group is, when we talk about digital first orientation, it's to change our processes so that we can be efficient in what we do in print, and we can develop more capabilities to serve the digital audience wherever they are. And if they're on your glasses, or if they're on a tablet or a smartphone, or on your desktop, which is still a large part of our audience, we need to be there, and we need to have the content. We need to have the people who can serve that up, and underneath all of that is our promise to the community and why we're doing this, which is, the business has changed radically on us, and we've done a good job, but there's a digital future, and we can be successful in a digital future. It's going to look a lot different than it did 10 or 20 years ago, but I'm convinced. I know the new houses are convinced. Steve, I think you're convinced that we can be successful in that world, and that's what we're driving toward. So I think I'm going to stop talking and take questions. I guess you have a fair number of questions, but thank you for allowing us to be here.
Thank you, Tim. Fred, show us your tablet again. There's a tablet. That's my kind of tablet. All right. For those, I know we have some guests here. Now we're in the Q&A. If you have a question, raise your hand. I'll try to get around the room, make it in the form of a question if you would, and keep it brief. Thanks.
I'm wondering if people in the checkout generation are going to have to think about the day that they die, only because you're now only going to be publishing on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. So when do obituaries on those other days get, do we have to pick a better day?
We're working this out with our funeral directors. and we will have selected days. This will come as no surprise to many of you. Most people want their obituaries to appear in the Sunday newspaper because it's the biggest newspaper. And so it really doesn't matter when you die, as long as you get that obituary in the Sunday paper. But we will be running obituaries 7 days a week, but those 4 days when we have single copy editions, we will run them there also. And they will be online on Syracuse.com. But most will continue, I'm sure, to appear in the Sunday paper.
I've got a couple of questions. Number one, my carrier offered to buy the other papers the other days and deliver them. My question to him was, there going to be anything in them for me to pay to read to get them, because I read the paper every day. Number two, when you look at Syracuse.com now, will you be able to flip through the pages and look like you're reading a paper, or are you going to have to look for an article on what's going on in Iraq? And number three, how are you going to pay these these reporters?
Well, we are going to be able to pay the reporters. and nobody, none of our reporters are taking pay cuts. And part of the problems that we have had in the last 5 years and what became very unsustainable is as I said, we were to stay profitable, we cut costs. And so we went through a period of pay cuts. We went through a period of some reduction of benefits. We also put all of our employees on unpaid 1 week furloughs. Looking ahead, those days must be gone. Those days are past. Our days of cut are going to be replaced by days of build. So the reporters and the sales reps are not getting less money. They're getting at least as much money as they are today, and will have the promise of, as our companies become healthier, to go back to the kind of almost guaranteed pay raises year after year after year. So I think that's the case. Now, how are we paying for this with a smaller staff? And how? Why are we able to put more reporters and more sales executives out? And that's because most of our cuts have come in production areas. We're doing a big paper 3 days a week instead of seven. Our distribution costs are obviously less because we're only delivering around Central New York 3 days a week instead of seven. So those cuts in our expenses are enabling us to pay and to put more reporters, more sales reps, the critical ingredients of our future. What were the other?
The smaller paper on the other 4 days, is it going to be just like comics and whatever? Or is it going to have news in it?
What would you like it to be?
What would you like it to be, Gene?
I like it to be an overview of what's going on in the city of Syracuse, because I can get the national news on television if you want.
So local news and events.
That's pretty much what, as a matter of fact, Stan and Tim and Mike Connor and I are meeting this afternoon, and we don't have a lot of time, but we have some time to figure out what those three home-delivered newspapers are going to look like and what those four single-copy papers are going to look like. We know that those single-copy papers will be smaller than what we are used to seeing today. But we know what we think is important to readers, and we know that local news. I mean, that's we're a local newspaper, and we do not think that we need to tell people in great detail about international or national news, because that news is available from many sources. But really, what's going on in Syracuse? There's only one place you can get it. And I mean, I know TV tries and radio, but they do about this much. If you count the stories, original reporting on a TV newscast, that would not even be maybe 5% of the news you will find in the Post Standard. And we plan to put that news. We plan to make that paper. I like to think of a model. And I've mentioned, Tim and I have talked about this, a model for a local newspaper is similar to the International Herald Tribune. If you've seen what that paper is like, it is chock full of news. It's only maybe 14 or 16 pages. And if we can figure out how to do that and with a focus on things that are important to Central New York, that's what we wish to do.
We've got another
question over here.
My question is directed to Syracuse.com, which I guess is the whole environment now in some ways. But, you know, at least to my mind, that the single most corrosive thing in this community is the unattributed posts that show up on Syracuse.com. And to my mind, I mean, I'm aware that the Buffalo News made a change where the people had to sign in and put their name. And my understanding was the views went down and then bounced back up. So I'm just curious, you know, given the, you know, the moral imperatives that you've talked about being a source of news coverage and civic engagement in the city, and the issue of the really unfortunate things that show up on those comment pages, I'm curious if you've given any thought to that.
There has been a lot of thought, and Stan probably as much as any editor of that we have has thought about that, and we have and I will let Stan talk a little bit about this because he is much closer to this issue, and we know this is a huge issue. We hear it whenever we go out in the community, and it's sometimes difficult to go to church on Sunday unless I wear a Jimmy Durante mask. Because I hear, you know, this is what we hear. But Stan, would you like to talk about this?
Sure, I can a little bit. Part of our new strategy, Tim had mentioned a position called Community Engagement Specialist. And what these positions will be is to get more into those comments, react to them, moderate them, have a positive influence on them, answer legitimate questions, make it an environment in which most people will feel much safer, much more attuned to really being a part of the news and conversing about the news and discussing the news and everything. That won't drive those trolls away completely, but it will tend to start dampening them down, and their comments can be removed much more quickly than they have been in the past. Lest you think this is a problem just in Syracuse, we all know it's not. Just about any place in America in which comments are allowed, those kinds of troll-like comments flourish. And we think we're taking a lead in this now to engage them much more directly, tamp them down, remove them, and encourage a real conversation to take place. And I hope you take part in that and really make this a discussion forum for Central New York about the news.
Will there be writer identification?
Sorry. Not of the commenters. That's not the plan now, but certainly by the community engagement specialists, the reporters, the editors, the directors of news who will be getting in there much more regularly. They will be expected to get in there and help tamp that down. They, of course, will be completely identified, but the commenters themselves won't be.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, how many people in the room are registered as commenters on Syracuse.com? You don't have to tell us your name online, whatever, if you don't want to. But just how many people are commenters? I think you do. You have to register, but you don't, your name. Okay, you have to, there's a process that you use. Yeah, you have to register. You can't just go on. You have to actually, you could be tracked down. But anyway, here you go.
Personalities. You guys have established a great number of people like Sean Kearst, Dick Chase, Case, Donald DeCitota, I think of as my sports, I'm a sports fan, but Poliquin, that kind of thing. What are you going to be doing with these people? Are you going to give them a wider leeway than they have now, except for Poliquin, who has all kinds of leeway.
And sometimes too much? Is that what you're saying? You probably are. No, Sean Kearst, Dick Case, Donna, Bud, this is the heart. This is the flesh and the blood of our newspaper, and it will be the heart and soul of our newspaper when it is in print and when it is online, when it is digital. Don Bud, as you probably know, Bud Poliquin does an awful lot of work online. He does a video every week. Donna has and Mike Waters have done a lot online. And we know that these people drive our business, and I don't know, we may even plaster their faces on billboards.
What about comics?
Comics. Do you like comics?
Love them.
This is a big issue. And I'll tell you what, I mentioned that some of the Newhouse newspapers have done what we are about to do, and they're trying to figure out what to do with comics. And some of them are printing, so let's say we come out on Tuesday with the Monday and the Tuesday comics, the Monday and the Tuesday puzzles, and on Friday, you keep catching up. And the thought of that probably is what we're going to end up doing. Well, it would not be my first choice, but it'll be your first choice. And if it's your first choice, that's what we want to do.
I've been a subscriber probably, or at least reading the Syracuse papers for at least 65 years, and I love it. It's the morning, how you find out what's going on overnight. But are you going to have it so that we can buy a digital subscription? I've been retired 9 years now, and I tried, you know, having the newspaper forwarded to me when I was in Florida, and I travel a lot. I would love to get the paper, so it's the paper that is printed digitally, and I would pay the subscription for it. And I have to cancel my subscription now while I'm in Florida because, you know, the mail has had a lot more problem than the newspapers.
Yes. We will offer in what we call an e-replica. So it is a version of the newspaper, say on your computer or on your tablet, where you can flip the pages like you can flip the pages of the newspaper now. So we will offer that e-replica on all days to our subscribers, which will again help complement on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays.
Okay, so will there be a subscription fee to look online as there is, you know, now, like at the New York Times, certain number of articles?
We have no plans to implement a paywall. Back to the comments, there's a sort of conspiracy theory that we've got a secret paywall plan. We don't have a secret or unsecret paywall plan. You know, I think my own view on paywalls, like the New York Times, it's an interesting exercise. It's one where we can always... It's not a difficult thing to implement, and at the right time, perhaps we want to do that. You know, at this time, we have no plans to do that for the content on the open web, and the idea is to, you know, re-engineer the organization, be better at presenting content on the web in all its forms, the mobile web, the desktop web, and, you know, we can always look at paywalls down the road.
Hi, I have a couple questions. With you expanding your staff and having more reporters being out on the street, will all of those reporters, will we be able to connect with them over Twitter or just online? So a lot of our favorite reporters who maybe don't have a Twitter handle right now, will we be able to follow them that way? And if so, is that going to be the best way to reach them, to connect with them on Twitter, or should we stick with phone and email? And then I have one more question. Traditionally, Thursday has been a really heavy day for articles about the arts community. Are we going to see that same level of support and articles about what's going on in the community, or can we still expect that more throughout the week, being that there will be more reporters?
The Thursday paper will be very similar to what it is today. Some decisions haven't been made, but we know the Sunday paper or the Thursday paper is a big paper. It's a very important paper for us, and it has the weekend section, and it has the community neighbors news section, and we see no reason to change that. Your first question is what we really want to do, and we are trying to develop connections as best we can with the community, with people in the community. And so we want to have this engagement, reporters, editors, with the community through Twitter, through, you know, through some of these things I don't even know, that you probably know that are out there. That's exactly what we want. We want to open this up more than it's ever been opened before.
So I hear there's going to be more reporters and there's going to be more sales reps, but what's happening to the editors? Are stories going to be directly posted by reporters, and is there going to be any kind of critical review of the article before it goes up?
We are of a belief that the reporters that work for the Post Standard and for the media group are capable of, and some of them do that now, directly posting stories on Syracuse.com. That is critical. Now, I also believe that any good writer profits from a good editor, and that relationship between a writer and an editor is absolutely crucial. And we will have less of that, and we know that going in. I think you will be the judge. We will be the judge because we'll be looking very carefully and critically at the work of our reporters. But there will be fewer production editors. Stories will not get the same level of reading that they get today. But the decision to have reporters on the street is so important to us that's the compromise we're making.
Well, and I'd add that in the editorial judgment process, there's always been differing levels of editorial review of any story. A complicated, big investigative story will get 2, 3, 4 sets of eyes looking at it, and that's a different kind of story than what happened in the high school football game the night before. So we'll use editorial judgment the way we've always used editorial judgment, and apply that to stories in the appropriate way. There's content that doesn't need a lot of editorial review, and we're going to have to use our judgment. We've got some great folks, and as we go through this, the creation of the new company and the new workflow that I talked about, that's what we're going to do.
I think we have time for one more quick question.
Could you comment about how your role in the classroom, particularly in the city schools, will change with all the changes in technology? And I'm particularly concerned about children who don't have access to technology as much, certainly at home and maybe not even in school. So how will your role be different going forward?
Well, we are going to push ahead with our NIE newspaper and education program. So we are not going to be abandoning the schools, but we are going to push out. And I would say, if you were to ask, what's the biggest complaint you've had since you announced these changes? And the biggest complaint are from people my age who say, I don't have an internet connection. It is hard for me to get out and get the newspaper if it's not going to be delivered to my home. What am I going to do? And we have been talking about a program, and I hope Marilyn Pinsky is here because she usually is. I want to take the NIE program and expand it into libraries and senior citizen centers so that we can make sure that there are enough devices for people of my age and even some who are older, if that is possible, to provide a level of training, much the way we do in the schools, to at least help answer one of these real heartfelt complaints. And it is hard when you hear from people who have been reading you for 65 years, and they say, "What am I going to do?" And we want to at least try to help.
Thank you, Stephen Rogers and Tim Kennedy.